Let's talk more on the type of intrusions, right? So intrusion is nothing but I will have the forceful entry to damage my environment, right? So physical intrusion. So what is physical intrusion? Physical intrusion is nothing but you know, anybody who has an access to your physical environment. Now let's see who can have access to a physical environment. Maybe somebody unknown or a guest, a visitor, your partner, your vendor has managed to walk in to your office where the employee is, you know, sitting. He can have an access to the laptop or the desktop. Maybe some engineer who has come into the plant, into the facility to work something on a SCADA environment, right? He's been given an access physically. He is there physically in the control room. He is carrying a pen drive, which has a malware probably, or which is infected unintentionally by a malware. You connect it and there's a physical damage. Your engineers, your L1, L2, L3, who are managing the data center, right? Who may have an access to the server farm. They can probably remove the entire disk drive because they have physical access. Obviously, you are logging in everything that's there in place, but still that is, you know, a risk which we carry for the physical intrusion front. If in case you are having the shared space or maybe the shared data center, which is co-located in somebody else's data center, right? So you may have the several other customers' infrastructure also installed there. So by mistake, if you know the engineer of some other organization tries and pulls out the hard drive of your server, which he was not supposed to do, that's a physical intrusion we are talking about, right? System intrusion, again, something that can be exploited from the system if there is a vulnerability within the system. So understand the mindset. One is something which can be physically removed, like say for example server and a hard drive. Something, let's talk about the same server, okay? One is physically hard drive removal, and another one is if there are no patches installed on that server, we'll take an advantage of it. Same server, one requires the physical touch feel. One doesn't require physical touch field. I will remotely exploit the system vulnerability. That's a system intrusion, right? Here, it could be done by the high privilege individual if it is on server, and it can also be done by the low privilege individuals if it is a user machine, right? So that is what about the system intrusion. Remote intrusion is something which is done remotely. Okay, here one may not need a special privileges. Okay, so let me give an example. So maybe you are using the TeamViewer, or maybe you are using the VNC as a software, or ME admin for a remote support, right? Maybe it is not licensed one, and the hacker also get hold of your machine say during a night, because you don't have a habit to turn off the machine. The machine is on. You are not near to your machine. Hacker can turn on your camera and can see that you are not in front of your machine. Let me take an advantage. So remotely, what he'll do, he'll probably take a remote, he'll probably try and access your Outlook, your email system, may try sending out the email to the unrequired individuals and may cause a harm. The email is just an example which I quote, but there could be several. There could be a financial transaction happening on the SAP system. There could be anything, right? So whatever is done by remote, okay, so when I say by remote, it could be done via VPN connection. It could be done by the corporate, the LAN connection, but the methodology is to be done remotely, right? So obviously the network plays a very major role here because network medium is something which will be used in this transaction, okay? Type of intrusion, bugs. During the monsoon, we come across lot of bugs, but these bugs are not only seasonal, they are always. So the IT related bugs are always, right? So bugs are nothing but they're kind of small piece of software, I would say, or an application which sits or which is installed within the operating system and may slowly create a damage, slowly create a system issues, slowly create a problems, okay, or maybe a performance issue as well. Buffer overflow. So buffer overflow is nothing whenever you are running the multiple programs at the same time. So say for instance you are running your SAP system or your Oracle system for the carrying out the business transaction, right? And obviously it consumes a part of the memory from your server, from your own desktop machine. Now if there is a hacker who is also running the sophisticated software which kinds of tries to steal the information from your machine or from your server, probably with this buffer overflow they'll try and override the information on the existing memory location which is being used for carrying out a genuine transaction, right? So that's nothing but a buffer overflow, which may probably affect your performance of your application. Unexpected combinations and the race condition. Again, two more the highly sophisticated kind of attack or the intrusion practices, which indulges in the intruder being able to send inputs to your machine, right? Which may be not meaningful to you. So when I say or when the slide says it may be meaningless to one layer, that means maybe I am operating out at a human layer. Maybe it is not. So I see a pop-up, I close it. I see a pop-up, I close it. I see a pop-up, I close it. But what we don't understand is there may be something going on at the back end, which may be very, very meaningful for my hacker. My hacker wants me to take an action of closing it down. Probably if I would have minimized it, the hacker wouldn't have executed that command, right? So that's something unexpected combination. Race condition is nothing but whenever you have two programs being executed at the same point in time. They should see today in the laptop we also open the Excel sheet, we also open the Word file, we also open the Outlook, we also open the browser, we also open several other applications. But when we talk about race condition, it is nothing but a conflicting applications with each other. And the beauty here is or the different here is they operate on the same file together. That should not be allowed. Password cracking. So there are certain examples which we are going to discuss on the password cracking. So if you are reading some security related articles or something, there are several passwords in millions. Okay, there are several passwords which are identified as a weak password. Say for example, pass@123, welcome@123, your company name @123. They are weak passwords, right? It's easily guessable. I can recollect an incident which happened in my own organization wherein there was a guessable password. We were using the O365, which is probably can be accessed from everywhere, which did not have a multi-factor authentication. We'll talk about multi-factor authentication in just a bit. But the password was guessable, right? And the hacker managed to get the password. Now, hacker had the entire distribution list, which had 5,000 plus email ID, including internal of the company and also the external parties. He managed to send to create a link, a hyperlink or a URL, and he managed to short the 5,000 emails within the span of 10 minutes. Imagine that email also had a link. So whenever a person clicked on that link, because the person was sharing a file, once the person clicks on the link, obviously he'll have to enter his user ID and password. That user ID and password also is being sent to the hacker. Out of 5,000, probably even if the 1,000 have entered the user ID and password, imagine the additional 1,000 user ID and password credentials are there with hacker now. He can again initiate the attack. So that's what it is. So these things are happening. They are much on the rise. Brute force attack is nothing but somebody is keep on trying and attempting to break the password unless it is break. So it may be a kind of dictionary attack wherein I know that the person had kept a password January @123. Let me try till December, February @123, March @123. April at that 123. Probably somewhere I'll manage to hit. And the password is broken when he when he reaches November at 123. Right? So that's nothing but a brute force attack. Anomaly detection, something very, very important element, friends. Why? Because if you know for sure that Sunday nobody is going to be in office, and you see an alert that there was a huge amount of file got deleted from the server on the Sunday from the IP, which is of the office LAN. Why in the world it should happen? Right? Nobody was supposed to be there in office unless it was pre-informed, unless it was, you know, taken a permission with. Then you see that from Monday to Friday, there is no problem. There is nothing happening. But on Saturday, it is happening. There is something anomaly, okay, which is not expected, but is happening. So maybe you have the sudden high CPU utilization. Why? Maybe because you have implemented an encryption in your environment, or maybe you have rolled out the EDR as a solution, or maybe a new antivirus solution which is causing the high CPU utilization. That's anomaly. Okay, so one needs to understand why these anomalies are coming, and you know, needs to be taken the corrective action accordingly. Okay, signature recognition, again one of the tactic of intrusion detection is nothing but what happens generally is the service provider, like say for example, intrusion prevention system, IPS or antivirus. So if I am using say Trend Micro antivirus, or if I am using say McAfee IPS solution, so the service provider, the original equipment manufacturer who have provided me the solution, they also understand the trend globally. Okay, I mean with all the customers, with all the traffic they see in you know their network also, and they also update the signatures on the periodic basis. Now, as a, if I am a customer of them, they will probably also push me the update saying that, hey, there is a new signature. Maybe you would like to install it on your environment because there may be a new threat which may also be applicable to your environment. Go ahead and install it, then you'll be protected because we have seen it somewhere else, it was protected. So that's something on the signature recognition. So wherein based on the pattern, the traffic will be analyzed, allowed, denied, whatever it is. All depending on the rule set you have set, and what all depending on the signature values which has been set there. Okay, notice the diagram. Here it is very important for all of us to understand the basic difference between IPS and IDS. One thing I must tell you all, that there is in this recent trend, all the boxes come with the prevention system, which is the advanced one. Okay, so when we say the prevention IPS, it's intrusion prevention system. And the intrusion prevention system box also has a capability to work as an IDS, intrusion detection system. So intrusion detection system, so if you notice the diagram, both are you know, sitting in your network. The difference in the intrusion detection system is this is sitting outside a path, it is not inline. So if you notice the IPS, it is very much there in the path, so that whatever traffic, whatever packets are being exchanged between the inside zone and the internet, it has to pass through that IPS box. Why? Because it's going to prevent it. It's not only going to detect it, right? So whereas in case of IDS, only a copy of the logs which is being sent to the IDS box, it reads, it understands the pattern, and it just throws an alert to the manager, to the required staff, that this is something unusual which is being detected. Okay, so IDS only detects, IPS also prevents. It is always recommended to have the IPS solution in place. But as a good practices, what organizations do is they go ahead and install the IPS box. They run it as an IDS to see what is going on in the network. And depending on the network analysis, they take a call. What all needs to be in a protection mode? What all needs to be in the detection mode only? Now in this IDS also, now friends, we are going into a little bit of more technicalities. So in this IDS or IPS also, there are a few types. One is the network based, which we just seen in the diagram below, which is sitting somewhere in the network path. Whereas in case of the host based, it is something on the agent, or maybe the software, or maybe the Windows inbuilt feature enabled on the user machine. Right, so anything which is, you know, kind of being unusual observed on the end user machine, probably it will be detected and informed at that level only. It will not even wait for to reach to the network, right? So obviously I can have a precursor, or maybe my SOC analyst can have a precursor to it, and they can take an action before it gets spread across the multiple machines. So that's the two types of the IDS or IPS: network based and the host based. Again, further, passive and reactive. As the name itself suggests, passive is nothing but what I would say is it will detect the security breach, it will log the information and throw an alert. That's it. Whereas in case of reactive, it will also respond. So if you have a suspicious activity, suspicious behavior, so say for example, if you have enlisted that if the IP request coming from China, maybe you would like to blacklist them. Okay, so all public IP request originating from China will be blocked, will be blacklisted, right? So something is being reacted on, right? That's something on the IDS IPS, but many a time it becomes confusing on is the firewall also and IDS IPS also the same? Well, no, there is a difference. Okay, so however, the new UTM boxes, new firewall boxes also come with an add-on module of IPS or IDS, but nature-wise they both are different. Okay, let's understand a little bit more in detail. So firewall, it is a network security device which will filter your incoming and outgoing packets both, right? All based on your predefined rule on the firewall. We'll talk about the firewall types, the layer 7 firewall and so forth as we go ahead. But now you understand that it blocks both your incoming and outgoing. Whereas in case of the IPS IDS, it will inspect the traffic, determines and classifies and takes the decision to allow or disallow. It may be one way. Because if I've installed the IPS on the perimeter, I'll probably inspect it only one way, right? Whereas in a firewall would be filtering the traffic based on the IP and the port numbers only. Okay, so if you might have raised any service request for opening a port, say for example you are implementing the Active Directory and you want port 135 to be opened towards your server from the firewall, you will have a request, right? And in the request you will say this is the source, this is going to be destination, and this is going to be a port. So firewall works on the port level, whereas in case of the IPS IDS, it typically works on the anomaly based or on the signature based, which we just discussed. In the firewall, the placement is generally in a transparent mode. So when I say the transparent mode, it is in line, in path. And it is always in the first line of defense. Okay, so like I may have the couple of the two-tier firewall architecture, but at the perimeter level I would definitely have the first line of defense as a firewall, right? Whereas in case of in IPS IDS, it is in line, it can also be out of the path. So like how the example which we discussed on IDS being only sent the copy of the packets, and it will just analyze and throw an alert. Okay, a firewall blocks the traffic, whereas in case of IPS IDS, sometimes the decision is also made based on the anomaly behavior. So if you are using the advanced IPS, and maybe over a period of time it understands the pattern. Okay, so whenever you are implementing the behavioral based IPS in your environment, what happens is that for say a month or so, it keeps on understanding the pattern of incoming and outgoing packets. The moment you enabled the protection, based on whatever was observed in a month, it will allow the traffic. But if something is unusual out of all this was observed, it will go ahead and block it. So that's something on anomaly based. And finally, the firewall will be working on a stateful packet filtering. It will allow, disallow the traffic based on the port, based on the IP address. The advantage which we get sometimes with IPS IDS is we may also prevent the zero day attack. So for those who may not know, the zero day attack is like how I'm talking to you today. Maybe at the same time there is a new vulnerability, new attack has been initiated, right? And it generally takes some time to have a mitigation control against them, but maybe it is stuck. I mean, this particular attack has been stuck with some partner or maybe some other customers in the world, and say they are using the McAfee as an IPS solution. McAfee managed to fix or create a signature for that attack, and they close that attack, and the same signature will be given to me somewhere in India to take up action before it's going to hit me. So that's something, a zero-day attack, which can be prevented as we go. Now let's talk a little bit more on the firewall. We'll also be talking about the firewall types as we go. So firewall, if it is used well, believe me friends, it is a beautiful piece of art. Okay. Provided it is used in a meaningful way. I have seen many implementation of the firewall which are completely unmanaged. You have the firewall and you at the end you have a rule any which is permitted. Completely rubbish, right? It is not going to serve the purpose for which you have implemented a firewall, right? So firewall, again, it monitors, it will filter the incoming and outgoing traffic based on whatever configurations which you have defined, okay? And it sometimes also protects your private network and also your public network. So many of the organizations I have seen, they always have a two-tier firewall architecture. With the cloud emergence and people going on cloud more and more, it may be also essential to have a firewall also on a cloud which protects or which adds an additional layer of protection. Talking about types of the several firewall, okay? So if you notice, based on the technology and based on architecture, we have a two broad categories. So based on the technology, I have the packet filtering firewall, which is a very basic one. I may have a proxy firewall, a stateful firewall, or a layer 7 firewall, or maybe the web application firewall. We'll also talk about them in just a bit. But now, just to understand from the summarized point of view, is you have two basic types as per the technology. As per the architecture, again, as per the architecture, you have screened host, you have multi-homed host, and you have screened subnet as well. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more on the firewall. It's an interesting subject. The expensive solution. So it is always essential to understand more. You all of us have a very basic idea what firewall is, right? We have heard firewall n number of times. And in fact, firewall is generally a culprit that if it is not working, obviously it's blocked. It might be blocked by firewall. That's a standard statement we always listen. Please get the port open on the firewall, right? So firewall plays a very important role in the organization architecture. So let's talk about application layer firewall, or layer 7 firewall. We know, and we have discussed the OSI several layers, and this firewall works at the top, which will inspect a very meaningful packet flow between the source and between the destination. So we have an example given here as a web application firewall and the DDoS as a firewall. Packet filter firewall is a little bit basic, as I said. It only inspects your source, your destination, and it will not have any visibility on what session is going on. There will not be any session tracking. There will not be any abnormalities. Like if you see that there are frequent half TCP connections, probably the packet filtering standard and may not give you the alert. Okay, so if you have worked on the router access control list or ACL, right, we write a command on the Cisco router saying permit IP source so and so, destination so and so, space port so and so. That is nothing but an example of the packet filtering firewall, works on the layer 3. Circuit level firewall works on the layer 5. Again, the beauty of this firewall is it inspects the header and the session information also. So the half TCP open connection, which I was talking about. So if you have defined a rule saying that if there are, say, 5,000 half TCP connection requests are being sent by one source, and you know it is kind of keep on making my CPU busy because it's a half TCP half open TCP IP connection, my server will continue to provide an acknowledgement, and then obviously the CPU is being heavily utilized. I will have a rule saying that if it is increasing beyond 5,000, go ahead and terminate the session, all the session probably, right? So that can be achieved by the circuit level firewall. stateful firewall, again a little bit more advanced one than the circuit level. This will also work on monitoring the session. Okay, so suppose if you have defined a rule in the firewall saying if between source and destination once the traffic is allowed, okay, for next 5 minutes, if the source destination port is the same, do not inspect the rule. Go ahead and allow them. This will save the the CPU of the firewall. This will also improve the performance of the application because it's maintaining the session, and because of which I can always increase the timeline of 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and so on and so forth depending on my need. But the beauty is based on whatever configuration which has gone in on the firewall, it will act on this. But the problem is this firewall may not have the deep packet level inspection. So suppose within that session, if somebody is sending out the zip file which has the malware, probably this firewall may not protect. It will only see that between source and destination, whatever port information is coming in, coming out, it will go ahead and allow it. Right? Proxy firewall. Simple reason, and I always give an example, proxy as a priest. Okay, so you, whenever you visit any temple, you provide your offering to the priest, right? Maybe a coconut or maybe the garland and all. The priest will take from your hand and he or she will offer to the deity, right? Who is priest? The priest is nothing but an example of a proxy firewall. Now take and connect to the example of the IT system. You want to open cisco.com, you want to open redhat.com, you want to open google.com, right? Obviously all users request cannot go to the internet directly, or should not go to the internet directly. You need to have some gateway, some priest in between who can check that yes, your request is kind of legitimate. If I already have that information, maybe a landing page, I'll probably go ahead and provide it to you back. If it is a new page which is being requested, I'll go to the internet, I'll fetch that page, and then I'll provide it to you, and I'll keep that information with me so that if somebody else is going to access that, I'll probably serve that purpose right from me. That's the beauty of proxy. Okay, so always always think from that angle, that there is someone who is keeping a check on your request for the internet. They are going for you on the internet. They will fetch the information and they'll provide it to you based on whatever is configured as per the organization policy. Okay, these days more and more organizations go on a cloud-based proxy. There are certain examples of Zscaler and all, which is a cloud-based proxy wherein you need not to have an infrastructure. You just have an agent sitting on your laptop, and whatever request it gets redirected from that agent towards the cloud. The benefit of having the cloud-based proxy is the same rule set. Even if you are operating from your office network, or even if you are operating from your any public network like hotel or airport, the rules will still be the same. If you are not able to open gmail.com or maybe a dropbox.com from office, same thing will also be applicable whenever you are using the internet from your home. So basically, if you are using the organization asset, the same rule will be applicable. Web application firewall, we have anyways discussed in brief, but let's touch base more. So whenever you have any web application, okay, so web application is when we call a web application, it is nothing but available from internet, right? So say for example, if you have Lotus Notes as an email client, maybe you have installed it on the DMZ, and which is also accessible from your public internet. Maybe you have an e-safety software or a tool which requires for the laborers to go through the training before they actually are coming to my plant for health and safety, right? That may be required to be accessed from outside. Maybe you have a training portal or a training sessions, pre-recorded sessions, or maybe you have intranet portal of the company which you want the employees also to be accessed from outside, or maybe your HRMS system. So examples are many. Okay, examples are many. So any system which can be accessible from the public internet without needing a connection of the internet or the VPN, that can be termed as a web application. Now, so you have a specialized firewalls which protects your web applications in a nutshell. Important concept, again, we are moving on, is under the identity and access management. We know, and everyone have the identities, right? We may have an Aadhaar card, we may have a PAN card, which has a unique number, which has a unique field, okay? If imagine that any changes you want to done in your identity, okay, how difficult it is. And in case if you're changing your name, imagine, you know, your difficulty increases. You may have to give in a newspaper, you may have to have the affidavit from the court, and so on and so forth. So identity is very important, and specifically when we talk about the IT or whenever we talk about a corporate, it becomes all the more relevance. Okay. Generally, as a standard practice, it is always recommended to have for the universal identity. Okay. So whenever I am onboarded into the organization, probably my identity is created. There may be certain applications as a birthright access I may get as a part of my identity framework. And whenever I am leaving on the same very day, same very evening, my ID should be disabled or deleted, right? Having mismanaged identity can create havoc. I have seen many examples wherein the privilege identity was leaked. So privilege identity is nothing but, you know, you have the server admin who has an access to your server environment. You may have some support staff who has an access to the specialized application, specialized software. If the ID of those individuals gets compromised, we have a lot of hackers who can take an advantage of it and take havoc, massive damage in my organization, right? So identity and access management plays a very, very important role. These days, the element of multi-factor authentication has also come in, wherein you might have noticed that whenever you are carrying out the banking transaction, sometimes few of the bank also ask for an OTP or the SMS OTP before you actually are presented the landing page. So everybody has understood the need of the identity. So let's have a little bit more detail as we progress. Physical security, what we spoke some time back in the initial slides of this chapter, is wherever you are storing your critical environment, maybe your critical facility, maybe a server room at the plant, maybe a colo facility or a co-location facility for the provider side, or maybe a disaster recovery site somewhere else which is geographically spread across, you need to have the physical security also inbuilt, right? So you may have turnstile door, you may have the biometric, the palm reader, the smart card access, and so on and so forth, right? So everything physically also needs to be protected. There may not be the logical security may not hold relevance if the physical security is not robust. From the access control point of view, let's understand on the certain type of control. Okay, mandatory access control. So here in the mandatory access control, the user will not be having much of the freedom to determine who has an access to the files. So just an example which is given is the security clearance of the users and the classification of data, okay, as like confidential, secret, or so and so, that actually determines your access level of that document. So say for instance, if you have originated or if you have initiated a document which has the confidential as a security marking, whatever policy you have defined, whosoever is given an access to a confidential files, they will be by default getting an access to it. So here user will not be in a position to pick and choose who can access, who cannot. It's all depending on the organization policy which you have defined. Discretionary access control is here, the beauty is the data owner. So say for example, let's connect back to the same example of you have created a file, okay? Now if you want only your department individuals can access to those files, only those people will be given an access, nobody else. Example quoted here is a system administrator who may create hierarchy of files, which can be accessed only after the certain permissions, right? So that could be an example of your discretionary or a DAC earlier one was MAC. It is not a media access controller. It is the mandatory access control. Okay, so please don't get mixed up. Okay, role-based access control or RBAC, again, very important concept. You might have noticed that in the bank, you see that you went today to the bank, you see the teller is someone else. Okay, when you go after a week or after a month, maybe the teller has changed and he or she may be doing or carrying out some other function, right? So their role is being changed. Now, if the role has been changed, obviously certain access which was given to that role may not be required now. Similarly, take an example of your own organization. If somebody was a system admin or if somebody was your Active Directory admin and he has internally transferred to some other companies, to some other department, within your group, maybe his role is changed and he is no longer required to have an access to that Active Directory environment. So I will change as per the role. Take an example whatever is given on the slide is you have a human resource, HR, right? Here in HR also, you may have a separate several people. You may not like to give the CTC or a payroll related information to all the HR members. Only the two or three people who are actually working in the payroll department can have an access to the CTC, but rest cannot have. Right. So likewise, whatever role which is defined in your organization or for the people can be only given an access to. Rule based is again somewhat similar, but not exactly similar to the role based. Rule based is based on the rule which you have defined for having an access to the environment. Okay. So say for example, you are students. And there is a rule which is defined that you can have an access to a lab or you can have an access to the internet only between 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Many organizations also have a rule that if you the social sites like Twitter and all are allowed, but only for half an hour. So probably they can have a rule saying that within during 24 days or during 24 hours. Only for half an hour the user will be allowed to access the file or access the social engineering sites. Rule based, right? So this is also an important element. The organization based access control, ORBC. Again, ORBC, if you notice, it allows the policy designers to define the security policies independently for the implementation. Okay. So like the example which I had quoted, birthright access. So if I am onboarded into the organization on a very first day, as a basic, I must be given email. I must be given the Active Directory or the domain credentials. And I must also be given the internet access. These three are birthright access. Again, I can also have the access to my HRMS system. I can also have an access to my company portal or company internal portal, right? So all these can be a part of your birthright access. If anybody wants an additional access, come with a request, come with the approval of your manager, follow the process and have an access to it. Now again, what's the duration of access you want? If your role demands permanent, okay, you can have a permanent access. But if your role demands only the temporary one, or 3 months or 6 months or whatsoever, you may have the temporary access also. Okay, so access control is very important element, friends. If it is not designed well, you may have a problem. But trust me, there are several identity and access management or PIM tools available now, which helps carrying out these functions in a complete automated way. You may also have some special feature within the tool itself saying, you can revalidate or recertify those identities or those IDs, right? All these features are very much there as a part of the recent solutions which are being offered, which are being available. Thank you so much for listening to me.